Welcome to Meet the People of MCB with Beverly Cascaden and Chip Haley, sponsored by the Missouri Council of the Blind. Let's get to it with this week's interview. Hello and welcome everyone to another edition of Meet the People of MCB. I'm Chip Haley.
And I'm Beverly Cascaden.
And we are back and better than ever. We've been absent, probably the last couple of weeks. There's just been a whirlwind of activity, just a lot of things going on. But Bev, I'm glad that we're back to doing another interview here today. And I'm excited about today's guest.
Oh, me too. And yes, spring has sprung and we've been outside and inside and getting things done, closets cleaned out, right, Chip?
That is right. That is springtime. That's the time to do it. Get it done. That is right. All right. Well, I tell you what, ladies and gentlemen, it is my distinct pleasure to bring on at this time our special guest for today. It gives me extreme pleasure to introduce at this time Mandy Dovin. Mandy, welcome to Meet the People of MCB.
Hello, everybody, and thank you very much for having me.
We talked earlier, so Mandy, we know that you've listened to a couple of these podcasts. So what we're going to do, we're going to start off talking about your vision and your visual impairment. So share with us, what was the cause, result of your vision loss?
So I have an eye condition that is more rare. It's called Leber's congenital amaurosis. Don't ask me how to spell it. I still can't. It is a genetic condition that affects the retina development in your eyes. So I was diagnosed as an infant, and my mother is actually the one who figured it out. When I was born, my eyes were crossed a little bit, and so they went in to do corrective surgery for that when I was about, I think, 8 months old, something like that. And when I started to crawl, my mom noticed that if I was crawling along a light-colored floor, I wouldn't see a pastel-colored toy until I crawled right over it. Mm. But I could see like the bright yellows, reds, oranges, things like that. But if she shined a flashlight on like a pale green or pale blue colored toy, I could see it when it was lit up and I would go find it. So through experimenting, she figured out something else was going on. So the way it was explained to me is that when babies are born, their eyes haven't finished developing yet. They continue to develop, vision changes and develops as an infant. And so as I grew, my body grew and my eyes grew with my body, but my retinas are missing rods and cones. Mm-hmm. So your rods are responsible for your monochromal vision, so your black and white vision, and then your cones, you have red, blue, and green cones in your eyes, which develop your color vision. And through experimenting over my lifetime and things doctors have told me, I have figured out that I am missing more of my red cones than blue and green, because it is easier for me to see blue light, green light, white, or yellow. But when you start getting into like the oranges or purples or reds, I can't see it unless my eye is like right on top of it. And I can see it better with my right eye than my left. And when the doctor looks in your eye to map your retina, mine actually has missing patches. So it looks like there's pieces out of the roadmap that are missing. And that's where those rods and cones would be. And with this eye condition too, you have a 50-50 possibility of being totally blind or having some usable vision, and a 50-50% chance of having a developmental disability or not. And I have been blessed and fortunate enough to land into that 1/4 that has some usable vision still and has no developmental disabilities. We don't know as I age how my vision will change, if it will at all. I just turned 40 in November, and in my last eye exam, I've noticed there's been changes kind of over the years, but I've also shifted how I do things. I'm a very, very strong proponent of Braille, And I use Braille practically every day. My Mantis Q40 is my best friend, besides my guide dog, of course. But so I don't read near as much as I used to, but when I did, I used the CCTV, and I've noticed that vision has changed, especially over the last 5 to 10 years. So we're not sure as I get older how that will change. But I live my life every day, and I do things with the vision I do have, but I also make sure I know how to do things without it. So that way, if for some reason I do lose all of my vision as time goes on, it won't be as much of a culture shock to me to be able to continue functioning in my home by myself and taking care of my dog and things like that.
Okay, very good. Thank you for sharing that with us. So then would you consider yourself then, I don't know, a high partial, low vision? So how would you actually?
I would say like low partial. Like everybody looks like a blob. Nice blobs, but everybody looks like a blob.
Thanks, Mandy. Can't wait to see you.
Yeah.
Oh, hi, Bev. You're the blob.
Hi, Bob, Love, Bev. I use a lot of high contrast. So, for example, my kitchen counters in my house are a lighter color, so I use, like, darker cutting boards and things like that. I don't really look at what I'm doing, if that makes sense, but I just do everything by touch. But I try to do high contrast when I need to.
Okay, good. Very good. Well, you mentioned that you live alone. You have your guide dog, of course. So share with us a little bit about your family. Did you have any siblings? Are your parents still living?
Yes, I'm actually born and raised in St. Charles. My family is all pretty much in that area. I have a cousin that lives in Wisconsin and a cousin that lives in Florida. But for the most part, everybody's kind of in this general area. Some family in Springfield, Missouri, but most of us are here. My parents live 5 minutes from me. I bought my first home in August, and it's exciting and terrifying in the same aspect. I about had a stroke when I had to pay taxes the first time as a homeowner. that was a bit of a culture shock for me. So, but I love my house. It's a townhouse. So it has 3 levels and plenty of room for my dog to be able to play and run and do his zoomies everywhere when he feels like it. But with my parents 5 minutes away, it's great because they're super helpful about things with transportation or if I need something. You know, one of them can run over real quick, or we can take Boz, is my current seeing eye dog's name. He's a 2-year-old golden retriever. Actually, this May will be a year for us. But we take him over there every few days, and he zoomies in the backyard and likes to watch all the birdies in the trees and the bird feeders, and he chases the squirrels away from the bird feeder because that's the bird's food, not the squirrel's food.
Yeah, okay.
And as far as siblings go, I have an older brother, and then I have some step-siblings as well. So,
okay.
But the matriarch of our family is my grandmother, and she will be 95 in July.
Oh, wow. Yeah, yeah.
And we all help take care of her. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, she's developing dementia, but still lives in her home, so we all take turns helping take care of her, which is
good.
A blessing that we can still keep her at home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very good. Yeah. So how was it for your family adjusting to your vision loss? Were they pretty well supportive? Did they accept it, or were they very protective? What was life for you like as a grown up at home?
So life was a little interesting, not in a bad way, though. I know for my mom, it was very, I wouldn't say intimidating, but overwhelming. For her, she had a 2-year-old and an infant. My brother and I are 20 months apart. And my biological father left when I was about 3 months old. Mm-hmm. So she was raising 2 children by herself. And to find out I was visually impaired, and my grandfather was ill at the time as well. So it was a lot for her. But I was telling Bev earlier, I actually did all of my preschooling through Delta Gamma here in St. Louis. So I'm a Delta Gamma grad, and they provided a lot of resources and support groups and stuff for mom. And mom knows some people who had one lady's niece has the same eye condition I do. So I know Carol was a big resource for her as well to ask questions and see kind of how, I do not remember her niece's name off the top of my head, but how she was able to live her life and do things. And she pretty much said the only thing she couldn't do is drive. And I'm still trying to figure that one out. But I always tell people I drive a golden retriever with leather exterior accents as my car. So, you know, I do drive.
Yeah.
But my family's been very supportive, very, very willing to help me learn things. A little sheltering in some ways, but just more typical, you know, teenage sheltering type things. But my family was very instrumental in helping me learn things like cooking and cleaning and laundry. And my grandmother taught me how to cook. And my aunt was very instrumental in helping me develop independence as well. Actually, all of my aunts and uncles. My brother and I are a true testament of it takes a village. And we have a very wonderful village. And we're a very, very tight-knit, close family. And so even to this day, my family still is very supportive and helpful when they need to. They were very excited when I got my first seeing eye dog back in 2002. And going away to college, they were very supportive about me actually not attending school here in the St. Louis area and going. I actually went to, my acceptance letter says Southwest Missouri State, but my diploma says Missouri State in Springfield. Yeah. I was down there when the name change happened, but my aunt and uncle lived down there as well. So I knew I at least had them available if I needed something. And I graduated from Missouri State in 2006 with a bachelor's in English and a minor in children and young adult literature. And then I went to Mizzou for graduate school in 2007 to 2008 and have a Master of Arts in Information Science and Learning Technologies, which basically translates as to I'm a Children and Youth Services Librarian. and then, unfortunately, I started finding barriers when I started looking for jobs in the library field. A lot of people were concerned about how could I keep children safe? How could I keep control of the environment if I couldn't see the kids? Which was something that I had to weigh in my mind and decide, okay, is that a battle I want to fight or not? Because as we all know, as blind and visually impaired people, we all have battles we have to fight. And we have to choose what we want to put our energy into. And I decided that was not a positive energy for me. So I went back to Missouri State in 2013 to 2015 and got a Master of Science in Student Affairs and Higher Education. So that way I could choose a different career path. Because as I thought about my college successes, I thought about, okay, who were the key people that helped me be successful in college? And they were not necessarily faculty. They were people in like the Disability Resource Center and the Advising Center and stuff like that. And that's where Student Affairs takes place. That is helping student development outside of the classroom. And so that's why I chose that particular master's and then tried to find a job in that. And I was struggling finding a job because I didn't really want to move halfway across the country, which led me to Rehab Services for the Blind. And I've been here for 6 years now. I'm a rehabilitation teacher, so I go into clients' homes and I teach daily living skills, technology, braille, whatever the clients need in their home settings. We do what we can to help them be as independent as possible.
Okay, so I want to back up. Thank you for sharing all that with us. So, and then I'm going to I'm going to turn it over to Bev here because I know she's just chomping at the bit. She's just got tons of questions. But where did you get your current dog?
He is from the Seeing Eye. He's pup number 5. That's in New Jersey. And I've been working dogs for 22 years. I had Elroy first. He was a big yellow lab. He worked for about 3 years. And then college life was not his cup of tea. and so unfortunately, he had to retire early. And my parents adopted him. And he lived at home. I am one of the elite Shepherd Golden handlers. We joke about that as Seeing Eye grads, is there were only a few of us who had the privilege to work a Shepherd Golden Cross. And I had Alibi. She worked from 2005 to 2013 and graduated with me for my bachelor's and my first master's program and developed some health issues and had to retire at age 9 and went to friends of mine in Columbia, Missouri, and she lived to be 15. Pup number 3 was a female golden named Sonia, and she worked from February 2013 to November 2021 when she died unexpectedly of hemangiocarcinoma, which is a very aggressive blood cancer. You don't know it's there till it's too late.
Oh.
And she hadn't even retired yet. She was still in service, and she died 3 weeks before my birthday, which was not easy.
Yeah.
And then I had to wait 10 months to get my next dog. His name was Pete. He was a Black Lab Golden Retriever cross, and I got him in August 2022, but was barely home with him a month when we were in a car accident, and he developed PTSD so bad he had to retire, and he's back in New Jersey with his puppy raising family. And I received Boz at May 24th, 2023. It was kind of cool. I got him 1 month shy of my 21st year of guide dog handling. And he's doing fabulous. He just turned 2 in October, and he's a handsome golden boy, and he knows it. And he's very sweet. He's a hard worker. I always tell people he loves hard, plays harder, and works hardest. And he's just super sweet, and he makes life so much fun and interesting. And he sleeps upside down with his legs in the air all the time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. On top of the vent in our bedroom floor. He sleeps on the vent all the time.
Well, I got my dog back in 1990 at Singai. It was a long-haired German Shepherd named Gunner. I had him for about 10 years. Yeah, and he died of hip dysplasia. So a wonderful dog. I hadn't had an opportunity to ever go back. My schedule when I was working at the Independent Living Center here in Joplin, you know, sometimes going into a consumer's homes, they were always concerned about dog hair, and the dog scratching up their floors and all these different kind of things. But I was like you, Mandy. I was into the homes of a lot of our consumers. But so unfortunately, I've never had the opportunity to go back get another dog. So again, thank you so much for bringing us up to date on that. And like I said, I know Bev has just been waiting to ask her questions. So Bev, I'm passing it over to you.
I tell you, I have loved listening to Mandy talk about everything that she's talked about so far. That the eye condition, I've never heard of that before. And it's always interesting on how people adjust to different levels of their eye condition. Mandy, I didn't lose my sight till I was 36 years old, but when I was 26, I was legally blind. So there is a little bit of an adjustment there, but boy, your mom was a smart lady to figure a lot of that out.
I give
her a lot of credit. I want to meet her.
She's pretty awesome. Not that I'm biased or anything.
Well, I tell my son-in-laws, it's your favorite mother-in-law. Well, you're the only mother-in-law. I know. That's why I'm the favorite. Right? Yes, but this sounds like to me you would be a great mentor for some of the others.
Oh, yeah.
Wouldn't she? Oh, my goodness. You know, and have you run across any children that are visually impaired and what you tell them?
I have worked with children off and on. I actually taught for, at the time, it was called Step St. Louis in 2011, I believe. It's a training program, 3 weeks. It's held at Webster University. It's called SOAR now. But they teach 14 to 21-year-olds in 9 different areas, like daily living, cooking, cleaning, housekeeping, laundry, mobility, etiquette, financial training, stuff like that. It's a really neat program. So I had that opportunity to do that and work with 12 kids and, you know, be able to help be there and mentor them. And it was neat having, at the time I had Alibi, my second dog. So having her on site all the time, so they were able to interact with her and see her working. And she was a no-nonsense lady. She played like a golden, but she worked like a shepherd. She was all business when she was working. So it was nice to be able to do that. I've worked with kids off and on through my time at RSB as well in consulting roles and just talking to kids and kind of explaining how their future can be and the things that they can do. Because so many people get stuck in that, I'm losing my vision, I can't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And as hard as it is to pick up your bootstraps and pick yourself up off the ground, you can do pretty much anything you set your mind to. You know, there's no limit except what you put there, except driving. We haven't figured that part out yet. But other than that, like, you know, it's people are their own limitations. Like, if you think you can't do something and don't try, you don't know until you try whether you can do it or not.
Yeah. And have you noticed too, Mandy, sometimes with the kids, especially at that age, it's not so much the kids as it is the parents, you know?
Yeah.
If they coddle them or tell them they can't do things, you know? So
yeah.
Teaching the parents is a big step.
And that even transforms into adults as well, because sometimes the client might be gung-ho and excited to try new things, but it may be the family members that are like, oh, you're not touching the stove, or you're not doing this, you're not doing that. And it's like, well, why would you put that barrier there? So it does take educating and counseling and persistence to help people understand that, okay, just because they can't see very well doesn't mean they can't cook dinner, they can't do the laundry, they can't fold the laundry, put it away, you know, barbecue. Mm-hmm. I know several people who barbecue on their own, and they're mm-hmm. visually impaired and different levels of visual impairment.
Yeah.
I know people who mow their own yards and they're visually impaired. So, you know, it's your limitations are based off of what you choose to put there, or sometimes family members who think they're being helpful. Mm-hmm. You know, it just takes time, and that's what self-advocacy is important for, because being able to have your own voice and being able to learn how to use your own voice to help you get what you need. Like, I can tell you, when I bought my house, there were a lot of people who made many comments about, oh, you bought a townhouse. There's so many stairs in your house. Why would you buy a house with stairs? I'm like, what does stairs have to do with anything?
Yep.
You know, my important things were like, I prefer not cooking on gas. That's just my personal preference. I like electric appliances. So my whole house is all electric. There's not a speck of gas in my house. So, you know, that's what I was worried about. Not that there's 37 stairs in my house if you go from the top all the way to the basement. I just see it as a cardio exercise every day, you know?
Yes. Yeah.
And things like, when I was a child, I went to Delta Gamma, like I said, as preschool. And when I went into elementary school, I had an aide from kindergarten through fifth grade. She was amazing. Her name was Mrs. Kerner. And she was hugely instrumental in helping me learn to do things for myself and see the accommodations that I needed to ask for. And when it came to transitioning to middle school, I was given the option, do I want to keep carrying on with an aide, or do I want to learn how to do things on my own? And I chose to learn to do things on my own. And my sixth grade teacher actually worked at MSD for a while. And so they matched me with him to be able to help me kind of get my feet wet in the accommodation process and what to ask for, how to ask for it. And I only had an aide a couple of times, but they were class specific things, like sewing class, or when I took foods in high school for cooking, I had an aide just to help me, you know, keep an eye on things and So that way the teacher could focus on the whole class versus just me asking a bunch of questions. But I did learn how to do it all myself, and which that was hugely instrumental in helping me be successful in college and graduate school, even at work, you know, knowing what I need to ask for and how to ask for it. And that's why those advocacy skills are so important, no matter how old you are and where you are in your vision loss journey. It's important to be able to ask for what you need and know how to do it in an appropriate and proper way versus being ultra demanding and saying, you have to give me these things. No, we don't have to.
But
you know, how to ask for it in the right way to get what you need to be successful in whatever your choice is.
Yeah. That's great. You know, and that's kind of a life lesson for all of us, you know, to know how to advocate for yourself and also to know how to do it in the proper way. You know, it seems like anymore we're in this me world, you know, that it's I. And we all need to, like you said, it takes a village and we all need to work together and try to be a part of the community that we serve together too. So I love your attitude, Mandy.
Well, thank you. And that expands out into just everyday things. Like I'm a musician, I sing for my church, and I had to learn how to explain to the music ministry how I needed things accommodated for me because I braille my words. So, you know, you can't make song choices at the last minute because then I don't have the time or, you know, ability to change it last minute unless it's a song I know by memory. I've been singing since before I could talk. And so I had to learn, okay, I actually had to show my process of how it took me hours to prep for stuff because I had to use the CCTV to read the words, type them on my computer, and then run them through my embosser or hand braille them with a Perkins brailler for paper, because in a Catholic mass, you have so many songs, it's like I just quit trying to memorize stuff because there's just way too many. Way too many moving parts there. So at least the words are in front of me and I memorize everything else, like the melody and timing and stuff, but I can read the words and not have to stress about that part. Oh, I was just going to say again, it's a self-advocacy thing. I had to make my voice heard in a kind and appropriate way to get the things that I needed.
So do you have any of your music available, like audio?
I do have some audio, yes. There are videos from my phone. And our church has a YouTube page. And so sometimes some of our masses were live streamed. But I've been singing since before I could talk. And when I turned 13, my grandmother gifted me with a year of private voice study. And she said, if you do it and you stay dedicated to it, I'll pay all the way through high school. And she actually ended up paying through summers when I would come home on summer break, I would do voice. So I've had 14 years of private voice study between middle school, high school, and college. And I've sung with some of the most talented choir directors in the country, with singing at the university and a church and different things like that. That's one of my stress reliefs. One of those things, you know, you find something you're good at that you don't have to try so hard for, and that becomes that stress relief for you, and that's my music. And one of the things, ironically, is I don't know how to read Braille music, so that's one of my projects I'm working on, is learning how to read Braille music so I can expand my repertoire more.
Love to hear some of your music if you're acceptable to it. I'd love to hear some, so I'm sure Bev would love to hear it as well. So if you have anything you'd like to share with us, we'd love to hear it.
Absolutely. I will definitely send you a file.
Did you go to the conservatory there in Springfield then too?
No, I thought about it, but I studied with a couple different graduate students, and a couple faculty members wanted the opportunity to be able to experience working with a blind or visually impaired person. So we kind of made a deal that, okay, I get free voice lessons out of it and you guys get the practice. So it was a really, really neat experience. I originally was a vocal music minor, but I found out I was going to be there 3 years longer for my minor than my major. And I was like, nope, we're going to change tracks here. change tracks here and get, you know, something else. So I love to read, and I'm a bookaholic, as my family says. So that's why I chose the writing route. And I'm actually in the process of writing a book at the moment. So
about your life, or yeah.
It's called Life's Lessons, and it's a collection of short story memoirs. Like, there's one called Dots, Cash, and Computers, and it's about learning Braille, learning how to read money and type when I was in high school with my Braille teacher. So there's a lot of them in there. There's a whole section for the dogs, because between Elroy, Alibi, Sonia, Pete, and Boz, I have stories. Believe me.
I think you better have a chapter, let your mother put a chapter in there too.
Yes, she's actually, I've talked to her, well, I need to talk to her more about it, but I was going to see, I'll write it for her if she wants to dictate it to me, but I was going to see if she would write the foreword for it or the intro.
Oh, cool. Neat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, Chip, this time's going to go by awfully fast.
I know, that is right, yeah.
Yeah, I want to spend more time with Mandy. Mm-hmm. So, but all right, you go ahead, ask your questions, and I'll come back.
All right. Thank you, Bev. So, Mandy, this has been so wonderful to get to know you close and up front. And thank you again for sharing so much with us. So you've kind of gone through your vision loss to your family and your education. A little bit about your work history. Now you're working as an RT for the Department of Rehabilitation Services. How did you start to get involved or become a member of the Missouri Council of the Blind?
I actually met people throughout my journey who were MCB or ACB members. And when I started here at RSB, the national ACB convention was here in St. Louis in 2018.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, I'm going to go check that thing out and just see what it's all about. And I walked in, spent half my time buying things from the exhibit hall I didn't need, but I thought it was really cool.
We all do that. Yeah.
Yes. And learned so much. I am a member of Missouri Guide Dog Users. That's actually how I got connected with MCB officially.
Mm-hmm.
And Guide Dog Users Incorporated sessions and stuff. And it was just so empowering to me to be able to be around so many people with visual impairments and blindness and see what they were involved in. And I started to get involved, like I said, with Missouri Guide Dog Users, and then I was the scholarship chair for one turn for MCD, and that happened during COVID, so I had to get creative because I couldn't get together with my committee to do things, so I had to figure out other ways to do what we needed to do because COVID was running rampant, and I decided that was definitely not a good fit for me, so I did not move on to do that another year. I kind of stepped back a little bit because with family obligations and work and buying my house and stuff, I just got too busy to commit mm-hmm. to things specifically. But my goal is now that life is starting to settle down, wear some wood. I mean, there we go, knock on wood. that I can become more active with MCB, and I'm already active with the St. Charles Lions Club, the original group that I've been a member of honorarily, and they've helped me since I was a baby, so I kind of grew up with them. They call me the Cub. So getting involved with them and getting more involved with MCB, and I'm a technology nut, so that's already plugged me for API,
yep.
Right?
Yeah.
And I am actually the chair of the Wolfner Advisory Council.
Oh,
so,
I didn't know that. All right. Yeah.
Yeah. So been active with that, and I keep myself pretty busy. So I'm just trying to find my footing and figure out where I fit in the best and what it would be the best fit for me. So
yeah.
There's a lot of areas she's going to fit in.
Oh, you bet. I mean, she is just so talented in so many different areas. I tell you what, Mandy, when I went to your breakout session doing Power Up this past week, I was very impressed listening to your presentation, and especially just going back and talking about the history between Apple and Android. I found that very fascinating, and I just thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought you did an outstanding, marvelous job, and really appreciate it. I did not know you, you know, like I'm learning about you today. So listening to your presentation, you really had captured the attention of your audience. And I thought that was spoke very well of, you know, your presentation and the fact that people really thoroughly enjoyed what you had to say. I did also enjoy a couple of other presentations during Power Up. I've been going to Power Up probably, I'm not missed a one since 1998 when they first started. I've gone to every single one. And what was it that made you decide, hey, you know, this is something that I think that I would like to do, is do a presentation on Apple versus Android at Power Up?
So I've gone a couple other times before and attended as many Apple or Android sessions as I could. And from the couple of years that I went, I did not see a presentation to where I learned what I wanted to learn, if that makes sense. And as a rehab teacher, I get asked all the time, what's better, Apple or Android? And so I started researching it, and I personally am an Apple user, but I do not force my personal opinion onto my clients. You know, I always make sure they understand here's the facts. And then the more I thought about it, I was like, well, since I haven't seen this presentation that I've been looking for, why don't I write a proposal for one and just see if they accept it? And they did. And I was super excited about that. So then I started learning my history, and I'm a huge trivia buff. I love to ask trivia questions and random trivia questions. And so that's how it led me to the history facts and the fun facts and things like that. And I like sharing stuff like that because you never know when random things will pop up in a trivia night. My family goes to them a lot. So, but that's what led me to do the presentation that I did, because so many people ask that question. So I was like, okay, let's just put it down there and put it out there of here's Apple, here's Android, here's what you need to do to figure out which one's the best fit for you to be able to be as independent as possible.
I love that approach, because that's one of the things that I would always do as well, is just simply provide the information and let the client or consumer make the decision on their own, not trying to force one over the other, whether you're talking about Apple versus Android or guide dogs versus, you know, the white cane, whatever it might be, or
exactly,
you know what, it didn't matter. So just presenting the information, the facts about whatever device, whatever it might be, and then let them make that choice. I love your approach. One of the other things that I wanted to ask you was, being an RT with RSB, I'm sure that you have quite a bit of technology devices in your own home. Share with us some of the things that you use as someone who's visually impaired and lives alone, and yet you're able to maintain your independence so well. What type of technology devices do you use?
So my iPhone I use first and foremost, with a lot of apps on it, like Seeing AI, Ira, Be My Eyes, things like that. I have a funny story for you. I'll make it quick. So when it came to buying my washer and dryer, I put a feeler out on my Facebook page asking people what their thoughts were. And I got all these things back from fellow blind and visually impaired users who were like, oh, this one's Alexa enabled. This one you can control with a smartphone app. This one, and I'm sitting there thinking to myself, okay, what if your power goes out? Yes. Or what if your Wi-Fi is down and you don't want to have to rely on those things? So I hunted and I found what I refer to as old school traditional washer and dryer with the traditional dials. Mm-hmm. And sorry, someone's calling me, but they'll stop in a second. So what I did was I got the traditional dials and used bump dots to be able mm-hmm. to label things. So I use a mixture of bump dots and Braille labels. Like my microwave is all Braille labeled. My stove, my dishwasher, and my refrigerator, which are all appliances that came with the house, they all have bump dots on them, so I can run the settings and stuff by myself. And I have a flat top stove, which is what my favorite is, because then you have to worry about if it boils over, it doesn't go down inside it and cause all these mm-hmm. problems. Gosh, I have my Alexa, who I ask trivia questions and do all these different things, recipes, things like that. I do a lot of stuff in Braille. I use my Mantis Q40 a lot. I have a Focus 40 as well. Goodness. I'm trying to think. I Braille label like all my DVDs and CDs and mm-hmm, mm-hmm. all my storage bins have PenFriend labels and Braille labels on them. I have PenFriend labels like on all my Christmas ornament boxes.
Yep,
so
yep,
that way
yep,
I can figure out what ornaments I want to get out that year. And then, you know, people will help me put up my tree and stuff. My mom and my aunts and I have a traditional Christmas decorating party every year mm-hmm. and they help me decorate my house. But then I can take everything down and put it all away by myself because everything's labeled with PenFriend or Waytags. I've been getting into the Waytags a lot more and Way Around app. I've been using those for labeling things in my freezer or my fridge and stuff in the pantry and different things like that. So I use quite a variety of things. Braille seems to be like the top thing that I use the most, because I Braille label everything. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually getting my tonsils taken out on Thursday. So I went over to my parents' house the other day and double checked to make sure none of the Braille labels fell off their microwave. And it was funny, when they moved into their house about 6 years ago, we went and they were looking for a washer and dryer, and the sales guy was like, "Why are your parents touching stuff with their eyes closed?" I said, "They're trying to figure out if I can use it." And so my parents were testing all these washers and dryers and stuff. Like, nope, can't label that. Nope, that doesn't even beep or that doesn't click, and no digital. It was just really cool to watch them kind of look at things and figure out, okay, what do we want to put in our home that we can use, but also Mandy can use as well.
Okay.
So my parents' house is Braille labeled a lot too.
All right. Well, that's really, it really sounds like you just really have it all together. But I'm sure you still have your challenges like we all do, but it's really good to hear that you're able to do the kind of things necessary so that you can live a full and independent life. One of the other things I did want to ask you before I turn it back over to Bev, Mandy, how would you describe yourself? It sounds like you're more of a, not an introvert, but someone that is more outgoing, outspoken. Share with us, how would you actually describe yourself?
Oh, gosh. I am definitely mostly an extrovert. I don't know a stranger. I'm that random person that annoys you when you fly somewhere that will just start talking to you because you're sitting next to me and we're stuck together for the next 2.5 hours. So I'm going to find out what I can about you. I am introverted in new situations, but more in like an observation standpoint. You know, I try to feel out the room, feel out people, listen to the conversations. You know, I won't just go like fling myself into a random conversation with people that I don't know. I'm a little bit more, more reserved. I wouldn't say introverted. I'm more reserved when it comes to things like that. I'm a very passionate person. Like, I get very excited talking about technology, guide dogs, independent, books, movies, you know, those kinds of things. I'm very family oriented. My family is very close. I'm a very compassionate person. I feel for people. And that's what led me to this type of work, because I wanted to be able to help people in the way I was helped and allow me to impact people, even if it's something as simple as meeting a person in a nursing home who all they want to do is be able to tell time by themselves. And I get them a watch.
Yeah.
The talks.
Yeah.
You know, and those are the things that give me such joy and vibrancy, because, you know, that person's life is better, not because I was in it, but because I was able to give them what they needed to make their life a little bit better. And I try to do that just in general, with just people. You know, I'm that type of person that, you know, when the cashier is checking me out, I ask them, "Hi, how are you? How's your day?" You know, and it was ironic when I flew to get, I can't remember if it was Peter Boz, but one of my last two dogs, the lady that walked me onto the plane from the gate, my parents had walked me to the gate and hung out with me there. And then I was talking to the lady and I asked her name. And I asked her how her day was and how was she. And she actually went back out and sat down and talked to my parents for, I think they said like 45 minutes about how much that impacted her day. Because she's like, I could go 2 to 3 weeks without someone saying a kind word to me or even asking my name. You know, and that's how I was raised. I was raised by 3 generations of women, my grandmother, my great-grandmother, and my mom. My grandmother was born in 1902, raised 5 kids through the Depression by herself, and died in 2000. She was almost 99 years old.
Mm.
And just the wisdom, and, you know, we weren't allowed to talk back and things like that. And, you know, it was always like, remember someone's walking their own journey and make sure you are conscious of that. And do I struggle with that sometimes? Yes, we all do. You're in a hurry. You don't want to take that second to educate somebody about your guide dog because you just want to go find food because you're getting hangry. But I have to remember that that may be that person's first exposure to a guide dog or blindness or whatever the case may be. And that 2 seconds it'll cost me to explain something to someone doesn't hurt me in the long run. I just might be more hungry by the end of it, but the food will be there when I'm done, you know. And so I try to live my life as positively as possible. I do struggle sometimes, like we all do. I have my blue days, as I call it, where I do struggle with things like I've never seen my mother's face clearly or my brother's, you know, in my whole life. And people ask me all the time, like, if you could get your vision back, would you want to? And my answer to that is the only way I would is if they could guarantee me 100% that it would be better than it is now. Mm. You know, if there's even a risk of losing it all, I would say no, because I'm content where I'm at. You know, God put me here for a reason and in this particular road for a reason. And I haven't figured out what his purpose is yet, but he knows. And it's my job to follow him and see where he leads me.
Amen. Amen. That is just so wonderful, so sweet and kind of you to share that with us and for being open about it and honest about it. So thank you just so very much for sharing that with us. I'm going to turn it over to Bev.
I got to tell you, there's so many areas that Mandy has talked about today that I relate to, you know, and some of the same things, Mandy. So I think we need to get together sometime.
Absolutely.
Now, which office are you out of, north or south?
I'm out of the North office.
North office. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So do you have a tough time with some of the clients talking to them about Braille, trying to convince them that Braille will be a very usable tool for them?
Sometimes. Like I said, I'm a very huge promoter of Braille, but I understand it doesn't fit everybody. So usually how I approach that is I will ask in my initial visit with the person if they're interested in learning Braille. And then sometimes they need a little space to think about it. And sometimes, you know, I just tell them, hey, I will teach you what you want to learn. Mm-hmm. If all you want to learn is to be able to label things in your house, or I know one person that wanted to learn just enough to play cards. Mm-hmm. And I had a 97-year-old lady one time. She just wanted to read her name. That was it.
Oh.
And that's what we did. And I've had to get creative because when you work with people who have neuropathy in their hands, for example,
yeah,
either diabetes or another type of condition, I've had to get creative and I'll hand braille through either a Slate and Stylus or my Perkins brailler on plastic pages, mm-hmm. the lessons, mm-hmm. because it's much crisper than paper braille. And sometimes we've been successful, and unfortunately, sometimes we've not. And mm-hmm. so I promote Wolfner a lot, especially for people who like to read, you know, and that takes some of the stress off of them. It opens up their world back to learning and experiencing things through books without having to have that stress of, oh gosh, I have to learn this whole new language to be able to do that. But then I've also had people who've been very, very successful with it.
Yeah,
so it just very much depends on the person. And I don't push, you know, it's one of those things, you walk that fine line of getting pushy about things. But, you know, if they mm-hmm. seem reluctant about it, you know, I'll say, okay, well, we can revisit it later and I'll ask again later. And if they still say no, then I leave it alone. But, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes you just got to plant the seed and let it grow a little bit and then they may come back to it or they'll try it and decide it's not for them. So.
Yeah. Well, I had to tell you when, I told you I lost my sight at age 36, and I was learning mm-hmm. Braille at the time, and my middle daughter was in kindergarten. She's learning to read. So I got those twin vision books, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And, oh, I'd read stories to her, and of course, I'm kind of slow reading the Braille, and she started getting faster than me, and she ended up taking the book away from me and reading it herself.
I make a game out of it because, like, you know, they don't teach cursive anymore in school. And so I make a game out of it with my nieces and nephews sometimes. I'm like, okay, you got two choices. You can either decode Braille or decode cursive. And I give them a key and I'll send them a note and they have to decode it and have their mom text me the answer, which I know she won't do it for them, but it's just a way to kind of put it in their hands, and they're all sighted, but they've enjoyed trying to learn. My niece in Arizona really took to Braille, and yeah, I've done the cut the egg carton in half and give them some rocks and teach them how to make Braille cells and letters and give them a card with the alphabet and stuff. And so
yeah.
I do those presentations, like when I go to schools and I talk to kids and stuff, I always get the class list and I braille their names for them.
Yep.
Either beforehand or while I'm sitting there, because I can do it off of Slate and Stylus or my Perkins. So, you know, I try to make it as out there as possible. So.
Yes, yes. Well, I tell you, when, like I said, my girls were all little. They were 3, 6, and 10. And so at Christmas time, I brailled their names on the packages.
Mm-hmm.
And
that
drove them crazy because they couldn't tell who's what's whose. And Allison said, oh, I figured it out. A isn't just that one dot. So
yeah.
So I start doing the number sign, number one, number two, number three.
Sneaky, I like it.
Yeah, but now with my, I live alone too, and my filing cabinet is all brailled, you know, the different folders
too.
In there. And so I've told my girls, who are all adults now, you know, when I'm gone, you're going to have a mess here if you don't learn braille.
Yep. Well, and people are fascinated because I can read it upside down too. Because when I'm teaching somebody, I've had to learn how to read it upside down, or I finally got smart after like 3 years of working here. I actually asked state office for braille copies on a SD card because the Mantis, you can just plug it into the back of it and I can access the book straight from my note taker and not have to carry the braille copies everywhere. So that made it a little bit easier, but I do know how to read it upside down for the most part.
Oh,
take me a minute,
wow.
But I can do it.
Yep. Or with the other hand, the left hand, can you?
I read left-handed anyway, because I'm right-hand dominant. So, Yeah. So usually you learn, you use your non-dominant hand because your non-dominant hand is less, is more sensitive than your dominant hand is, because your dominant hand is used for everything. So I can read right-handed, but I'm much better left-handed.
Oh, wow. I got to start all over then.
No, you don't. Some people will read their dominant hand too. So it's just whatever's comfortable for you.
Uh-huh. Great. Good. Well, I haven't checked the time, but I have a feeling we're getting close to our time. So I'm going to ask you about your hobbies. What hobbies do you have? It sounds like I could probably answer those already. Go ahead.
I'm a musician. I sing. Uh-huh. I play a couple different instruments. I've been learning the kalimba, which is an African thumb piano.
Oh.
So that's been kind of fun. And I read a lot, music, movies. I'm a huge horse racing fan and horses in general. I collect Briar model horses. Mm. And I'm a huge Harry Potter fan. It's like my basement's all decorated in Harry Potter and Hunger Games stuff and my horses.
Have you ever ridden? Do you ride?
Oh, yeah. Once in a while. I haven't ridden in a while, but I really enjoy it when I do.
Did you ever do therapeutic horsemanship?
No, we talked about it, but when I was in school, I was just too busy.
Yeah.
I was in a show choir and we had a lot of extra concerts and stuff and the school and homework, and homework always came first. Like my mom says, you work before you play. And, you know, it took me longer to do homework and stuff. So I didn't get as active and stuff like that I wanted to, but
yeah.
And that's okay, because I got the academics and I was able to get away to school and learn and become active and doing different things there. So I enjoy goal ball. I enjoy beat baseball. I don't play as much anymore, but because I'm learning, the older you get, the harder it is when you hit the ground to get back up. So I bowled on one of the blind leagues in St. Louis for a couple of years and ended up stopping that because it just was too much for my schedule. So
yeah.
So mainly right now it's just I read a lot, listen to music, watch
and
movies,
entertain your
hang
dog
out with my family, entertain my dog.
Yes,
he's fun. He likes to play with his toys and he has them everywhere. Looks like a toy store blew up in my house.
Have you ever gone up to Frontier Park there in St. Charles and gone on the trails? Because I've been told they've got Braille signage, you know, as you go along.
I haven't seen the Braille signage lately because I haven't done it lately, but I used to do that all the time. And when I was in grad school at Mizzou, a group of us would walk the Katy Trail all the time. And my dog was a little prissy, so she had to wear her shoes because she didn't like the pebbles getting stuck in her feet. So that's that Shepherd Golden Cross for you. But I enjoy walking, and I'm hoping after the surgery is done, getting my tonsils taken out, it'll change things for me and make it easier for me to get out and do things, and because it's been impacting me a lot physically. So hopefully I'll be able to hit the trails, and with my new house and stuff, we found a lot of places we can walk and stuff. So I'm hoping that once I have healed up and am back on my feet, I can start doing those things with Boz and get us out and get us in better shape. Well, at least me, he's in good shape, but.
Well, great. Good, good. And give a little plug for your church. What church do you go to?
I go to Assumption of the Blessed Virgin Mary in O'Fallon, Missouri.
No kidding.
I sing with the 12 o'clock choir, and I usually sing, sometimes I sing with the 10 o'clock, but like the summer, like July and August, my choir director, Sue, and I will be singing the new masses while the choir is off. So if you want to
hear me in
person, come join us.
Wow. Okay. And did you hear the performance that the Choral Arts did at your church?
I was actually sick when that happened. So I wasn't able to. Oh, no. Last Sunday I was in Columbia. So I missed that. But I heard about it. But yeah.
Yeah. I've got several friends in the Choral Arts. I wanted to go to that, but couldn't make it. Oh, Chip, this has been a great interview.
It has.
Like I said, I'm not watching the time, so I'm going to ask you.
Okay. Well, we're right up against the clock. So, yeah. But I do have one last question for you, Mandy. We talked about it before we started the recording. The Barry Manilow song, Mandy, like it, don't like it? Any stories about it?
So I don't think my parents figured out I would figure out that the song's actually about a dog. But that is what I am named after. And I tease them all the time because my full name's Amanda. And I was like, okay, if you're going to call me Mandy, why didn't you just name me Mandy? And they're like, well, Amanda's prettier. I'm like, okay, but you named me after a song that's about a dog. So you named me after a dog. They still deny it, but it's just, I like to give them trouble about it. So. But I do like the song, actually.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
So tell us something about yourself, Mandy, that nobody knows except those that are really closest to you, like your immediate family. But if you've got something that you would like to share with us that maybe just might knock the socks off of some people that, oh, I did not know that about Mandy, let us hear it.
Oh, I'm actually sorry. A Lego master. So I started this during COVID. So my brother and I have always built with Legos when we were kids, because if I wanted to know what something looked like, he would try to build it for me. So during COVID shutdown, I started a project a month where I had to build a replica of something, whether it was the office, my parents' house, my grandmother's house. And I got challenged by a friend of mine to build a dollhouse for Calico Critter sized dolls, completely out of Lego. And I did it. And oh. I enjoy it. So like I'll build big Lego build. I don't build off of kits anymore because I can't read the books to do them. This is not as accessible as I wish it would be, but I build all kinds of things. Like I built right after the fire at Notre Dame, I built the outside of the church just by touch, completely by touch.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And so I'm a Lego guru. The Lego store people always know me now. They're like, oh, what cool project are you working on now? Because I go to the back wall at the Lego store at West County Mall and buy a bunch of the little tidbit pieces that you can't buy in just regular boxes of Legos to complete different things. So like when I built the Notre Dame church, I actually found these Lego chains that you can connect to each other to make the bells.
Oh, neat.
So, yeah.
It was really cool.
Yeah.
That was kind of my little fun project to keep my sanity in place during COVID.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah. Really awesome. So again, Mandy, thank you so much for being our special guest here today on Meet the People of MCB. It's been absolutely wonderful.
Well, thank you very much for having me. And it's been a pleasure speaking with you guys. And I look forward to getting to know other members of MCB as time goes on.
Okay, thank you so much. You bet. Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you know someone that you would like for Bev and I to interview here on Meet the People of MCB, you can have them give me a call, Chip Haley, at 417-540-9703.
Or Beverly Cascaden, Bev, at 636-561-6947.
You never know. You might hear yourself right back here next time on Meet the People of MCB. Enjoy your week, everybody, and we'll catch you right back here next time. Bye-bye for now.